Southern Shakespeare is one of our most valuable and active art and culture organizations. The moving plays, theatrical genius, and educational programming has served our community, entertained us, and given us some of our best collective memories. Well, they're at it again with an upcoming play. And today, we sit down with the director of the new production to talk all things theater. Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Warehouse. I'm your host, Josh Johnson, and just like always, we have an incredibly special guest and an incredibly special conversation. Today, I am joined with local educator and local director, Randy Lundgren. Randy, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much.
I would have had it no other way. So let's jump right into this thing. The reason that we're here, the event that anchors this spot, is a play that you are directing with our very own Southern Shakespeare Company, which is just an incredible outlet. That play is A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yes.
So my first question for you, which is going to be a softball question, okay. What does it feel like working with the great folks over at Southern Shakespeare Company?
This is my third foray with them, and I love working with them. I'll tell you, it's very different from working with high schoolers. they come in ready for rehearsal. Working with adults is so much fun. And I almost feel like, gosh, that's easy compared to working with kids. But they are fantastic. And James and Bianca and all the people. And I've put some of the people who are in the shows that I did before, they're back in this one. So I get to work with them again, and I'm very excited.
That sounds incredible. Mm-hmm. Before we get into the nuts and bolts, I just have some peripheral fan questions for you. One of the things, you know, I think out of all the shows that we shot, I think that you may be the first director of theater that we've had on. We've had documentarians and we've had filmmakers on, but directing a live action play has got to be different in its own right. What does it feel like knowing that when it happens, it's happening, and the preparation is the only mitigating factor? There is no editing. There is no reshooting. What is that feeling to a director?
It's really exciting. scary, but exciting. Sure. And I'll tell you, like last year, we did a comedy, and during one of the performances, someone bumped the wall with their rear end, and the whole wall fell down on stage. Not meant to happen, but I've raised the actors to be able to improv if they need to.
Sure.
And they improvised the heck out of that scene because of the wall falling down, and it was hilarious. I was sitting there laughing so hard, tears were coming out of my eyes, and they were so afraid that I was going to be mad. And I was like, are you kidding? It's a comedy. That was hilarious.
That added to it.
Yeah. So, you know, with a show like, you know, a musical, it's a little more difficult to, you know, be spontaneous, but it worked for that one.
We'll get into some of this later too, but you're a multidisciplinary artist in so many rights. How, from all of your different veins of artisanal instruction and lifestyle, did you settle upon directing and theater in itself?
So my first play, I was in fifth grade, and it was a church play, and I loved it from that moment. And I wanted to act, but then I took a directing class in college, and that was, I got to create a world the way I wanted it to be. And that was my favorite part about directing. And going into education, because I knew I wanted to be a teacher, I didn't want to be an actor or a professional director. I wanted to be an educator. And so I was very excited about going into molding how kids see the world. And help them to see it the way I see it.
These plays can be passports for people, and they can
absolutely
take them on trips. I love the way you said that. Let me ask you this. In your last answer, you said that you get to create the world as it is. From my research of you and just from my knowledge of you as a colleague and a friend, a lot of the things that you direct are plays or things that have already been set in stone, do you still have the freedom to create a world within somebody else's work, in this case, Shakespeare? Do you still get to improvise? And
so Shakespeare, the best thing about Shakespeare is he's in the public domain, so you can do all kinds of creative things with him. In fact, with this show, we have fairies ziplining in and appearing. So there's and light up, their costumes are going to be lit, and it's going to be really neat.
And where's this going to take place?
At the Tallahassee Museum. So I'm in amongst the animals. In fact, part of this, one of this big scenes takes place inside the turkey pen. And the audience is up above on the platform watching. And then Titania, the queen of the fairies, her bower is on one of the zipline platforms. So
that sounds incredible. Yeah. For some reason, I was thinking that it was going to be at the amphitheater, but this is going to be immersed.
So it'll start at the amphitheater.
Okay.
And then you move, the audience moves to different parts of the park, and they go through and then end up back at the amphitheater at the end.
I love that. And what is the date for this show?
April 30th, May 1st and 2nd, and then May 7th through the 9th.
Got you. And so I'm not going to give away anything, even though, you know, A Midsummer Night's Dream has been seen time and time again. We still want to leave a little bit of excitement for the audience. But I will say, because I have a question, you know, we start with Theseus and Hippolyta, right?
At their wedding. Mm-hmm.
How do you say it?
Hippolyta.
Hippolyta. We start with their wedding about to happen. And we both know how they feel about it. You know, it's going to pass by like a dream, and he's eager. From that start, we get my favorite type of film, or my favorite type of play, or my favorite type of event, which is the interwining and internecine of stories. It doesn't just go with these main characters. Mm-hmm. There are so many stories that are being wind into it. Mm-hmm. Does that add to the burden of a director having to keep track of all of the stories and all of the actors and making sure that you're doing? Does it give you a utilitarian side to you, or is it still art?
It's still art, especially, you know, any good playwright is going to make it all flow into each other the way it's meant to. And, you know, there are three different storylines, but they all come together and mishmash. And Shakespeare was brilliant. I mean, look at, we read his stories 400 and some years later. So, and this is the third time I've directed A Midsummer Night's Dream. So it's a very well-known, I think the better that the director knows it, the more easy it is to weave all that stuff in and make it all flow.
Almost like a chef. If you know what you're doing, the ingredients aren't that scary. They're only scary to novices like me, who cannot cook, by the way. So piggybacking on that question, one of the themes of this play is kind of, I wouldn't say the confusion, but the battle between dreams and reality, right? Or the edge of dreams and reality. As a question not posed specifically to the play, but posed more so to your work in reality, are you living your dream?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. This is all I've wanted to do. This is what my heart wants to do, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
And is it as you dreamed it to be? Or is the reality even better than the dream?
It's a little of both. You know, there's tough days with anything.
Sure.
But it kind of calls back to the show that I'm directing at Godby right now, Hadestown, because the story is known, and it's an old song. They've played it over and over again, and each time they try it again, they are hoping that it'll change and something will come out differently. And that aspect of hope, it's a hope for the future. It's a hope for my students that I gave them the little bit of skill they would need to explore this great big world and beyond high school, and to hopefully have affected their hope for the future as well and making it a better world.
You know, I'm glad you took that pivot, because first of all, shout out to Amos P. Godby High School. And second of all, So first of all, before I get into this, what are the dates of the Hadestown play?
It is April 17th through the 19th. The 17th and 18th, it's at 7 p.m. and 3 o'clock at matinee on the 19th.
Got you. And it'll be at the Bradford Auditorium.
Yes.
Got you. So going back into that question, you were talking about your experience as an educator. Mm-hmm. And while all educators are incredibly special, just because it's latched on to the very work that they and we do as an educator myself by trade, you're an educator of the year, right? We've had some really cool guests on this show that have shouted your name out, like Aaron Watson of the Pharaohs of Funk, right? Mm-hmm. You have made an impact. Not only in the lives of your students, but the life of the community of which you live. Let me ask you this. Is the discipline to teaching theater the same as the discipline you would think to teaching other subjects? Or because this is a subject that's available to the arts and imagination, do you have more free rein, or do you have to be more deliberate? What goes into teaching people how to be imaginative?
Mm. That's the hardest thing to do, especially nowadays with the kids the way they are, because they're so 30-second TikTok and getting them to think and just imagine is very difficult to do. But it's funny when they put on the costume, they can run through the practice, they can run through all the songs and that kind of thing. But when they put on the costume and the lights go down and the lights are the way they need to be, the world is there for them to become that character. And just sitting back in the back, listening to the audience enjoy what is happening is the best feeling in the world.
Do you see that same glimmer in the eyes of adults, too, when you're directing? So it never goes away.
No, it never goes away.
I love that. It kind of reminds me of Harvey Fierstein, you know, one of the world's greatest stage actors. Mm-hmm. And he says, it's so fortunate that Mental Health Month and World Theater Day are during the same month, because people get set free on the stage.
It is freedom.
It is literally freedom. You can see it in the faces. You get to become a new person, expose a different experience. I love that. Mm-hmm. So me and you got to work together kind of once on a theatrical performance. We've worked together in several ways before, but I was able to lend my voice to Theodora, which was a play about a young woman, and this is just a brief description, obviously, not to diminish the play, who had survived the regimes of both Hitler and Stalin. Mm-hmm. And so that theme of survival is something that comes up constantly on programming like this, because there's so many artists out there that are afraid of their dream because they're afraid that there is no monetary fruit in it. Yeah. As somebody who's achieved to be a working artist, right, you are not only fulfilling your dream, but you are doing it within your profession. What would your advice be, not to a student or not to somebody you're directing, to somebody that you may sit down next to at a cafe who says, you know, can I ever find economic gain in what I do? What would you say?
I would much rather go to a job every day that I love and not make that much money, just enough to survive, than to go to a job that paid hundreds and thousands of dollars an hour and still hate going into work. You never work a day if you love what you do.
I agree.
And yes, there are going to be bad days, but overall, the good outweighs the bad tremendously. And the impact that you make outweighs all of it.
I love it. Did you have mentors that helped you land in that place, or was that just trial and error?
I knew I wanted to teach ever since I was little bitty. And I started out as an English major with a theater minor, and then they kind of seduced me into being a double major. So I ended up with 2 degrees, one in both and teacher certification in both. So I knew I loved theater and I wanted to direct shows and have like a drama club and that kind of thing. And then it started at Godby as a club, and we did one play, and then the next year I got a class, and it grew and it grew and it grew to where I couldn't teach English anymore.
Sure.
And seeing that program that I built, I don't want to sound braggadocious at all, but seeing the something I built mm-hmm. grow and be established in known in the community
sure.
is probably one of the things I'm most proud of. And then seeing those kids leave my program and go on, like the lead character in Hadestown got accepted into a musical theater program, a BFA program, and he didn't plan on doing musical theater ever in his life until he came into my program his freshman year and started to like it and enjoy it, and then now he's choosing that as a career. So
one of the, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's okay.
One of the themes that I revisit on this program from time to time, just out of like natural progression or necessity, is the fact that exposure is mm-hmm. the greatest education, is sometimes the greatest form of education. And that answer that you just gave, nothing wraps that up as quite as much as that, that somebody who didn't even know mm-hmm. that this was something that they could even dream for,
yeah.
just by being exposed to it, found mm-hmm. what they now may be meant to do for the rest of their
yeah.
lives. And that's an incredible, incredible yeah. achievement.
Yeah. And that those kids, all of my kids make me proud.
Mm-hmm.
But
oh,
those
sure.
kids, you know, they're choosing something that I introduced them to. And
yes.
that's really special.
How many plays have you directed with Southern Shakespeare?
Southern Shakespeare,
with,
this is my third.
Your third with mm-hmm. Southern Shakespeare. And how many about would you say that you've directed in total?
Oh, Lord. definitely more than 45.
Sure.
At Godby, so I've been at Godby for 18 years and two shows a year, plus the, you know, Black History Month programs
sure.
and those kind of things. And then I directed the Leon Summer musical a couple of years ago, and Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Uh-huh.
And so there's been several opportunities that have come my way recently to direct outside of school, which is exciting and interesting. And I have to remember that I'm only one person and that I can't do everything because there's so many things that I would love to do. In fact, I just saw that they had announced for Theater Tallahassee, they're looking for directors, and one of the plays that they're doing is on my bucket list to direct. But I don't think I can fit it into my schedule, and it just breaks my heart because I want to do it so badly.
Well, you might not be able to fit it into your schedule, but you sure feel right into my trap, because my next question, the reason I set that up was going to be, and I know for artists and artisanal minded people that this is one of the hardest questions, to make them choose between their pieces or their plays or their roles. it's like children. But what is your favorite play that you've ever directed? And what's one play that's still on your bucket list?
Mm.
Two-part question.
Okay. So the one on my bucket list uh-huh. that is Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead.
Ah.
And I've always loved that show. In fact, my kids took it to districts and state and internationals, a scene from it. So it's pretty powerful in my brain. And I've always loved Hamlet as well. So that as a comedy aspect to Hamlet is pretty interesting. There's so many different layers to it that it would be so much fun to do. My favorite that I have directed right now is got to be Hadestown, because I connected so personally with it. Last year, I had breast cancer. Right about the time of the play is when I had a double mastectomy. And the theme of hope hit ever so more home this year, because I have this hope that the cancer will never come back and that I will continue in my health, and hope for the kids and their future, and hope for our country and this world that we live in. And the fact that we have to get up every morning and do it again and again and again, even though it maybe is going to be the exact same thing that happened yesterday, we still have hope that it'll be better and that it'll be different. And that's the whole overarching theme of the musical. And I think that that's why I connected so deeply to it, because I have, and I have to cling to, hope.
I love that answer. I really like that answer. Another one of the themes of A Midsummer Night's Dream is the transformative power of love. Mm. What you've just done is shown us that while we always put love on a perch, sometimes the transformative nature of hope and things more ephemeral than love are just as important. And I've never been at a loss for words, and that was an incredible anecdote. In closing, I would like to say something to you. Earlier, you mentioned Joseph and the amazing Technicolor dream coat. And that coat made of all of those fabrics and all of those colors, kind of like a quilt draped around his neck, made me think of something, that whatever you have sewn into the fabric of not only your students and your personal life and your community, whatever that thing is, I think that you should know that it's a brilliantly colored tile, and we appreciate you for how you've served, and we appreciate you for how you will continue to serve.
Thank you. That means a lot.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you all at home for joining us for another episode of The Warehouse. See you next time. Bye-bye.